Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Welcome to Green Sense, a weekly look at the people, policies, and innovations that are changing our world. Here's Robert Colangelo.
Hey, that's me. And I'm sitting at the intersection where common sense and economic sense meet to make green sense. Bob Kessler, executive producer, will tell us more about who we're going to meet this week.
Robert, in your college days, you trained as a hydrogeologist, didn't you?
I did. And I even studied some soil science.
Yeah, because did you ever compete in a soil judging competition?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, well, we'll find out. For one thing, we have the national champion coming up who will tell us all about soil, a young woman named Autumn Boxen from Minnesota. Recently, Robert, here in the Midwest where we're located, they had to shut down a national park because of a chemical spill. And it just seems like there was bad communication and bad practices all around. So we will get to the bottom of that.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that. And that's all coming up on this edition of Green Sense. Beaches along America's newest national park, Indiana Dunes, recently had to be shut down because of a chemical spill into the nearby Little Calumet River, which flowed into Lake Michigan, killing thousands of fish. Nearby communities and local officials were not informed about the dangers for days. Howard Lerner is an experienced public interest litigation attorney and president and executive director in the Environmental Law and Policy Center, and joins us now again here on Green Sense. Howard, thanks for joining us.
Good to join you and your listeners.
Well, the Indiana Dunes National Lakeshore is a model for industry and nature to coexist. Heavy industry, mainly steel, is intermingled with beachfront communities and fragile duneland ecosystems along the shore of Lake Michigan. CBS Local News reported that the steel company ArcelorMittal had an uncontrolled release of into the Little Calumet River of cyanide and ammonia that killed 3,000 fish. Can you explain how the spill happened and what are the risks to humans, animals, and the environment?
First of all, we're dealing with cyanide here. I don't need to become a scientific expert for you or for your listeners on what the problems are with cyanide. It's a serious problem, okay? That is a poisonous compound. ArcelorMittal released, I'm going to use the word released, spilled, we assume it was accidental cyanide into the river system. The fact of the matter is industrial businesses and all businesses that are operating around our lakes and rivers have got to do an absolute first-rate job of avoiding these sorts of chemical spills. That's responsibility. That's corporate responsibility. That's social responsibility. That's environmental responsibility. We all understand that sometimes mistakes happen, but when it happens, the company has to notify the public and the agencies right away. And at least from what we can tell from publicly reported information, ArcelorMittal didn't do that here. And that is very unfortunate.
But is IDEM and the US EPA also culpable? Isn't there ongoing monitoring that is supposed to catch these things when a company doesn't report a release?
Well, first of all, the responsibility is the company that did the pollution here, ArcelorMittal. You know, it's not the job of the US EPA or the Illinois EPA or the Indiana Department of Environmental Management to, on a minute-by-minute basis, be watching to see what a company does. This is corporate responsibility. This is social responsibility. Companies should not be allowing chemical spills into our waterways. Secondly, it's the business's responsibility when there is a spill, because we don't have the state or the federal environmental regulators sitting at their doorstep watching every minute. It's their job to let the regulators know, let the environmental agencies know and the public know right away when there's a spill. Then it's the job of our state and federal environmental agencies to take appropriate responsive action, do it quickly and effectively. That means move quickly to work with the company to clean up the problem, make sure that the impacts on the environment and public health are as little as possible, and then figure out in terms of remedy what should happen so that you provide the right incentives in which a polluter pays for the problems they're creating, and you create the incentives economically to do it right.
Well, there was a 4-day lag from when the spill happened to when and some nearby communities knew about it. What went wrong?
You know, I can't tell you what went wrong in a granular way. A 4-day lag is unacceptable. This is one where ArcelorMittal or any other company like that that has a chemical spill ought to be letting the state and the federal environmental agencies, the local public officials, and the public know right away so that the public isn't going into a site that's been contaminated to canoe or take a walk or swim or take a dog into the river. The local officials know what's going on so they can take appropriate action, and then the federal and state environmental authorities can act. There's no legitimate excuse for a 4-day lag for ArcelorMittal or anybody else to have informed the respective public authorities.
Last time we had you on the show, we talked about a hexavalent chromium spill in roughly the same area. So it seems like this is happening more and more often. The relaxation of regulations is just another example of how EPA has been defanged. You know, they once had enforcement actions which were wielded like sledgehammers by regulators, and now it's been reduced to a limp hand slapped on the wrist. And the public is, you know, left without a trusted government source to protect human health and the environment. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I'll describe it a little bit differently and just put it in my own words. First of all, Northwest Indiana is a heavily industrialized area. So when you have a lot of industrial facilities, even when companies are doing good management, good performance, occasionally things are going to happen. So when you have a heavily industrialized area, you may tend to have more problems there. That's not an excuse. Everybody ought to be at zero when it comes to these sorts of chemical spills. But this is an area, a lot of industry, where stuff happens. But what you really need then is a federal EPA that is a tough but fair enforcer, so that the businesses know they really have to be extra special careful. And if they screw up, there's going to be a response from the federal agency, and they're going to have to pay for it in terms of fines and penalties. Unfortunately, the current U.S. EPA does not appear to be that sort of a tough but fair regulator and enforcer. Unfortunately, the Trump administration is rolling back enforcement.
So what's a citizen to do when you take our current system, the courts, litigation, which is expensive and it takes too long, and fines are too small to impact a company like ArcelorMittal to take meaningful action? So how do citizens deal when they have a release and their natural resources are damaged?
You know, Bob, let me challenge a little bit of that. First of all, fines should not be small and therefore not provide the right incentive. Fines should be big enough so they really send a message to the company that, hey, when you make a mistake like this, there are heavy economic costs in terms of fines and penalties. That gives you the incentive from a business standpoint to do things right. Look, I wish that the U.S. EPA under the Trump administration was a more vigilant regulator. Unfortunately, they've been slipping backwards. And that's not a criticism of some of the good people who are working, for example, at the U.S. EPA Region 5 office, but they're getting the wrong messages from the senior people over in Washington and some of the other folks who are in leadership political positions. But if the U.S. EPA isn't stepping up and is indeed stepping backwards, then we need our state EPAs and our local governments to step up while the federal government is stepping back. So let's look to our state EPAs. Let's look to our state attorney generals. Let's look to our local officials to do the job that we wish the U.S. EPA were doing better at this time. And if not, that's where citizens have the capability. Groups like ours, the Environmental Law and Policy Center, and others can take cases to the court. you know, citizens can act, citizens can move to do enforcement, citizens can bring legal actions, but we should be looking first to our federal and state environmental agencies to do their jobs and do it well, and to our local officials. And you know what? Citizens should not put up with the federal U.S. EPA not doing its job well. They work for us, the taxpayers. We shouldn't tolerate a new normal of, well, they just don't do it well under the Trump administration. We need to push back at them.
Let me challenge you, is what kind of a fine do you think ArcelorMittal is going to get levied on this? And how do you assess the impact to the natural resources so that they're properly paying for the damage done?
You know, Bob, that's a complicated question. I don't know the answer, and I'm not going to fake it with you and your listeners. First of all, there needs to be an assessment of exactly what happened here. How much was released? What was the delay precisely in terms of ArcelorMittal reporting it to the public officials? Why was there a delay? What was the impact of the release? I mean, there are people who can do those sort of economic assessments of the impact on natural resources. Not my field of expertise. There are people who can do it well. What do the state and federal laws provide for in terms of fines and penalties in these particular factual situations? I don't know all the facts on that, and I'm not an economist who can do that assessment. The point, central point being, the fines and penalties need to be significant enough so that they send the right message in terms of an economic signal to ArcelorMittal or any other company of, when you have a spill, a release that contaminates our lakes, our rivers, it's not cheaper to spill and then pay the fine, but the opposite. We send an economic signal that polluters pay, and you pay more when you don't report this immediately to the government.
Well, I concur with you that there needs to be a balance, and it needs to be fair between industry and the environment. But it seems like these spills are happening more and more because of lax regulations, and people are starting to get fed up about it. So in summary, give us a couple of strong action points. What can people do who want strong measures to be taken to prevent this from happening again?
First of all, we should not tolerate a new normal that, well, it's okay, we understand it's the Trump US EPA, they're not going to do a good job. We should insist that the federal EPA, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, do a strong job of monitoring enforcement and taking appropriate actions when companies like ArcelorMittal and others break the laws and spill toxic chemicals. This is our governmental agency. It's a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and the U.S. EPA should do it right. We shouldn't tolerate that, well, that's the Trump administration, they won't do it well. We should insist they do it well. Secondly, when the U.S. EPA steps back, we should look to our state EPAs and our local officials to step up. You know, in the absence of federal action, let's look to the state agencies to be working with the federal government and with our local officials to take the appropriate actions. They have powers, they need to use them. Third, when the federal and state agencies aren't acting, we can take it to the courts. But we need to win not just in the court of law, we need to win in the court of public opinion. Fourth and finally, people should vote. I know people care about a lot of issues, but if you care deeply about the environment and you don't think that a federal EPA is doing its job well, or if you don't think, for example, a particular state attorney general is doing his or her job well, get out and vote for somebody else to do a better job. This is our government. We need to insist they do their job and they do it well to protect public health and our environment.
Howard, thanks for joining us on Green Sense and sharing your thoughts.
Glad to, and hope you have a good weekend.
That's public interest litigation attorney and president and executive director of the Environmental Law and Policy Center, Howard Lerner. This is Robert Colangelo, and you're listening to Green Sense. Subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with our sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live, so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
As we have learned, soil is much more than just dirt, and its health is crucial to our own survival of the planet. Someone who sees soil perhaps a bit differently than most is Autumn Boxham, the soil judging national champion and recent college graduate. Autumn, welcome to Green Sense.
Thank you for having me.
Soil is a complex combination of material. Tell us, what makes it different than dirt?
Well, the most basic way to explain it is that soil is when it's in the ground and it's supporting life and it's functioning the way it should. Dirt is when you have some mud on your shoes and your track and it's inside. It's soil out of place that's no longer working the way it should.
Great definition. So what makes up soil? I know there's sand, clay, loam, you know, there's organic material. Tell us a little bit about it.
The mineral component of soil is broken into size classes, which is sand, silt, and clay. So sand is the biggest, silt is in the middle, and clay is very small. And then the organic component is, you know, decomposing plant and animal matter. And so we have mineral soils with organic matter in them, and we have organic soils with a more organic matter than mineral. And those would be like in peat bogs. But most of the soil that you see around you is probably mineral soil with some organic matter mixed in at the top.
Well, you sound very knowledgeable about soil. So how does one go about judging soil?
Judging soil is, the way I did it was a college contest. And there were pits dug by the NRCS or college that was hosting the contest. And those would be analyzed. They would look at the soil and they would describe its characteristics, and from those characteristics make some interpretations about its functionality for different uses. And then other college students, including myself, would also enter the pits and look at those same characteristics and make those same interpretations. And if you matched closest to what the experts had said before, that would give you a higher place in the contest.
Well, most of us think of soil just for agricultural purposes. What else is soil used for?
Soil is really important for agriculture, obviously, for growing crops. It's also important for rangeland management, which is what I'm doing out here in Wyoming. with grazing pressure and everything. But soil is really, really important for engineering. You cannot put buildings and roads and septic tanks and all sorts of things in certain soils, legally in wetland soils, but also just for the stability of your home, it's important.
Autumn, how did you get involved with judging soils?
Kind of by accident. I had a required class in soil science, just a real basic introduction, and it was just so fascinating to me because I had never thought of soil in that way. And the professor of that class also was the coach of the soil judging team, and a bunch of people in that class just realized we had to know more, and the rest is history.
What's the most interesting fact or bit of information about soil that most people might not know that you could share with us?
Oh, boy.
Or maybe I'll ask it a different way. What makes you most passionate about soil? Because it sounds like you really enjoy it.
I think one of the most interesting things about soil is the way you can learn about the landscape and its development. Soil, people talk about it in almost a genetic way, how it develops in different locations and different climates from different materials, different geologies, different plants. Even the aspect of it's facing southwest versus northeast. I saw a really cool hill once, and it was built on the same geology. The hill was just there, and the soil on either side was completely different, and the plant composition on either side was completely different because of the aspect. And that was just so fascinating to me that I would normally just walk past that hill and have no idea what was underneath. And I see the world differently now. I'm always thinking about what about the soil, what about the landscape is making the plant composition and everything the way it is.
Well, those who drink wine know how important soils are and how slight variations in the mineralogy of soil can impact taste. So it sounds like you've had a similar experience.
Yeah, I guess so.
So in an article published by the University of Minnesota, it mentions how you carry a soil color guide with you a lot of the times. What does the color of soil tell us?
Soil color tells us a lot of things. Some important uses is for determining wetland soils, which are not suitable for building and also important for conservation. You can really tell a lot about the water table by looking at the color of the soil. Another thing that you can look at is just its productivity. If you think about potting soil that you might buy in a store, it's really dark, black, rich soil that shows a lot of organic matter and nutrient buildup. And so something that you may see in farmland that is not managed properly is really eroded topsoil. And instead of the thick, black, dark top layer of soil that you would expect to see that would be good for growing crops, it's actually eroded down to some subsoil, which is a lot lighter often and not very nutritious for plants.
Well, tell us about the practice pit at the University of Minnesota and how this helped you assess soil color.
Oh, yeah. So a lot of universities have practice pits that are dug so that different classes can go in and see the soil up close, because it's one thing to talk about it and look at pictures, but it's another thing to really feel it with your hands and see it in place. The practice pit in the University of Minnesota campus has a really nice dark top layer of soil, and it's also got contrasting parent materials. I believe it's over top of some sand, so it's got a silt layer cap, and then it's got sand underneath, and that's really apparent when you're looking at the color.
Well, tell us the connection between judging soils and soil conservation.
Judging soil is a lot of just interpreting the characteristics and being able to pick out different details about the soil. Conservation is making decisions based on those characteristics and the land area as a whole and what the land is being used for. So judging is kind of a step into that area, but conservation is a lot more of the people side of it for sure.
What's next for you, and does it involve soil?
Yes, I am currently working for the Natural Resources Conservation Service in Wyoming, and I am working as a soil scientist doing soil survey for some unmapped areas. Mapping these areas will be really important because they are being used for rangeland primarily, it seems, for my first couple of weeks on the job. And grazing pressure and everything is really important for the people who live and work out here because they want their land to be productive and their animals to be well taken care of. And so making management plans for them is based on the soil and the amount of grazing it can produce.
Well, they say soil is life. And so congratulations on your new position in preserving our soils.
Well, thank you.
That's soil judging champion Autumn Boxham joining us on Green Sense. We hope you enjoyed this edition of Green Sense. Visit greensensefarms.com to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play, and you can check out the list of radio stations that air our show. All you have to do is stay fresh, keep innovating, because when you're green, you grow.
Green Sense Radio is brought to you by Green Sense Farms. We're changing the world with sustainable indoor vertical farming, growing more with less. Our leafy greens are sold live so they burst with flavor. Visit greensensefarms.com and watch us grow.
Green Sense is recorded in the Duneland ecosystem on the eastern shores of Lake Michigan. The program is copyright Green Sense Farms, all rights reserved.